Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh man, do we have reality today?
It isn't. Well, I guess it was below the surface and then on top.
Below the surface, yes. This is episode 169, and we're going to talk about a movie called Colossal, which is directed by Nacho Vigalondo, a Spanish director. And I had not heard of this movie before, nor had I heard of the director before. So where did you find this gem?
There were a lot of ads on TV in Dallas for it.
Really?
They were trying, and we kept seeing Anne Hathaway and them going, that's weird. And then Rose got it through her Netflix queue. I'd kind of forgotten. I'd kind of meant to watch it. The reviews were pretty good, you know. And so we said, oh, we're up for a monster movie. And you start off and it's a monster movie and it's all fine. And then it takes this flip where I was hanging on by my fingernails going, I'm very uncomfortable. Very, very uncomfortable. I don't like what's happening right now. I thought it was such an interesting kind of way to look at a monster movie. And the director, I hadn't realized this, but I've had another movie of his recommended to me several times. Chrono Crimines, I think it's called. In Spanish, it's Time Crimes in English.
Ah, okay.
And I haven't watched it yet, but...
But it's been recommended to you, so...
By a variety of people.
Interesting, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I got to put that on my list.
Yeah.
It's and then the other one, I see he's got Elijah Wood in a movie that he did, which might be his most popular one other than those, is Open Windows. And I haven't seen that either.
No.
So.
Not ringing a bell.
Looks like you got some stuff to watch.
Depends. Did you like this enough to want to watch another
I was, did I like it? Yes, I did like it.
Okay.
Yeah, I did not dislike it. But it was very, very odd. And it took me a while to sort of unravel what I felt about it. And I still don't know that I've nailed that down. I might need to watch it again. But it is not typical at all. And it wasn't at all what I thought it would be. But you told me, just go in dry, make sure you don't, you know, have any preconceived anything. And that's what I did. But I did know just from the cover and things that it was a monster movie. And when we say monster movie, it's like Godzilla or that type of thing where you've got a giant monster terrorizing a city.
In this one, it's Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis, if that's how you say his name, are the stars. And
both really, really great.
Oh, yeah. They're both really amazing in this. And Anne Hathaway actually had gotten herself into, she says, an artistic corner where she was just being offered the same sort of thing all the time. And she wanted something different. And so she went to, is his name Jonathan Van Demme? Anyway, a director she'd worked with who I vaguely recognized the name. And he recommended her to watch a couple of different movies. And she told her agent, none of whom were by this director. But she told her agent, find me something kind of like these. And she thinks of this movie as being sort of in the same vein as Being John Malkovich, which
interesting.
Was okay, but I did not love it. But it was also odd, right?
Right.
And so this movie came along, and they were getting no traction on doing anything with it until she attached herself to it. And then, of course, things happened. But so the basic movie, and this is going to be super basic because we'll dive into spoilers really soon, but I don't want to spoil it, is a young woman who looks like she's kind of, she's out of control. She's got a drinking problem. So much so that her boyfriend kicked her out of his apartment, and she goes to her parents' house in somewhere in non-specified bucolic looking New England, I think, and is living in her parents' house, which is a rental house. So there's no furniture or anything. and connects with Oscar. Her name is Gloria. She connects with Oscar, who's played by Jason Sudeikis, who owns a bar. He gives her a job. She kind of becomes one of the gang of friends. And then a monster, like Godzilla type, appears in Seoul and starts demolishing buildings once a day. And she doesn't understand it, but she has a very characteristic little way she scratches her head sometimes. And this monster is doing that. And so she's like, holy moly, and starts to kind of track down and realizes that at a certain time, in a certain place, she is actually the monster without realizing it. It's some kind of a weird thing. And she tells her friends, and it kind of takes off from there. I don't want to. What else should we say?
Yeah, I don't know that we should say anything else.
Maybe it's a voyage of self-discovery at that point.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. Yeah. And Anne Hathaway is terrific. You know, she's funny. It's sort of a dark comedy, I would say. You know, because she's in a really tough place at the beginning of the movie. She drinks quite a bit. And
she blackout drinks.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of things, funny things that happen, and that's part of the uncomfortableness for me was, you know, some of that stuff would happen, and I think it was intended to be funny, some of it, and I was like,
right,
you know, it was so tragic that I wasn't laughing at it, but that right. happens to me a lot in dark comedy anyway.
I think that's why it's called dark comedy.
I think so too, but yeah, I've been sitting next to people that seem to really love that stuff and really laugh hard, and I'm like,
what's wrong with you?
That's horrible.
It's making me cry inside. Yeah.
You bet. So, but she's terrific. She plays it just right.
And people were saying, even people who didn't like the movie, which were not many, but they were saying, if nothing else, see it for her performance.
Oh, that's cool.
And I would say also Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah, he blew me away.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that too.
Okay.
But yeah, so anyway, whenever you're ready, let's jump into
the
that
spoilers.
Stuff. So, yeah.
Which I assume most people listening to this would have seen it anyway.
Yeah,
however,
I would guess
if
so
not,
too. But yeah, by all means, give this thing a try. It is unlike anything that you've seen. It's something that'll just, you'll say, well, I haven't seen that before. Which
well,
is
I have
great.
To say, so spoiler territory,
yep.
We were watching this all unaware, like most people. And it suddenly changed into just looking at this personal abusive relationship. But it happened so gradually. And Jason Sudeikis' character changed, he changed so gradually that we were like, what did he just say? What happened? What is he doing? Oh my gosh. You know, the part where she walks into the house and he's there waiting for her.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, it suddenly turned into a horror movie about a stalker.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. And it took that turn. And, you know, he turned from this lovable guy into, like you said, this stalker. And I noticed when he was, I was just going to say he's always drinking whenever that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But he was drinking when he was nice, too.
Right.
And that made me kind of pull back the thought that popped into my head that, you know, he was always drunk at that time.
Oh, that it was alcohol?
Yeah.
No, I think it was a classic abusive person's M.O. It's they act really nice. They're the best people. You can't believe you met somebody so nice. And then as the relationship goes along, they start exerting more and more control. And it seems pretty reasonable at first. And then it seems a little odd, but yeah, we'll go along with it, you know. Like when he's in his kitchen crying and going, I'm sorry. And she's like, oh, hey, I've had, you know, been drunk and acted weird. So no worries. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You saw me scratch the face out on the picture of the woman.
Right.
You know? And she is just being nice at that point.
Yeah, and even when he's being nice, like when he's bringing her stuff, that's also exerting control, right? He's like, here's a TV. Now you kind of owe me. Here's a couch. Now you kind of owe me. You know?
Right. And it's all too much too soon.
Right, right.
You know, when he shows up with that TV, we were all like, why did he? And he's like, well, we talked about this. You don't remember? And then, of course, he's deliberately giving her too much to drink.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he can say whatever he wants at that point.
And maybe it never actually even happened. You know, he's making her question her ability to judge reality. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have to say, one of the things watching it a second time, which it was good watching it a second time. So I was pleased because I'd watched it only about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was worried it might be too soon. And I'd be going, no, I saw this. It's fine. Was that you can pick up on more of the little signs they give up front of what's wrong with him.
Oh, okay.
You know, the minute he started to be more abusive, I flashed back to him saying, well, there was a woman who moved in with me, she and her six-year-old, and then she left me for no reason. Hmm. And, oh, what? You thought I was stalking you? You know, and I'm like, yes, yes, you were. But so those were more obvious, but there was the point when she's got the apology written and she's going to write it in the sand of the playground. And he's gotten the translation and they're in the truck and she says, oh, well, you know, it's going to be, can't do it till morning. You go ahead and go home and go to bed and rest. And you had a long night and I'll just do this. This is my problem. And he's like, no, I want to, what? It's both of us in together. I want to do it too. And so he insists and she lets him come. And then they get to the playground and she's going around and she's like, no, you go sit over there. I'm going to do this by myself. This is my mess to clean up. And he's like, oh no. And so while they're arguing, he says, well, then why did you insist I come? And she looks at him and says, I didn't insist. And he goes, yes, you did.
Wow, that's a good detail.
Well, I don't have time for that right now. And I thought, this time watching it, I went, oh, that's classic.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn the argument around and now it's your fault.
Yeah,
and maybe
well done.
You don't remember the conversation. Yeah.
It's interesting how it turns into a different kind of movie, like you were saying. But we've got this, it's like a novelty, I guess. If it wasn't so horrifying, I mean, people are dying.
Right.
You know, so when she steps inside this park, there's a giant monster that is destroying Seoul, South Korea. You know, it makes zero sense whatsoever, especially at this point. And then, but then this Oscar character, as he becomes more and more assertive, it definitely turns horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like the monster isn't the monster. It's him that's a monster. And it really kind of took me by surprise.
Oh, yeah. Because what, you know, we're always told that horror movies and monster movies show something of the human condition or what people are worried about or that sort of thing. And in this case, what we're seeing is people's inner monsters.
Hmm.
And it's kind of interesting because she's unaware when she's hurting people. And once she realizes, because she's just wanting to dance and have a good time, right? He uses it to control her with. And he's kind of enjoying stomping on things and scaring people. When she's, maybe she wakes up and sees it on TV and the robot, which is what he turns into when he steps in that playground, is there by himself. And it's, I guess, him and I can't remember the like Nelson is there. So they're watching on a laptop or on an iPad so that he's not hurting anybody, but he's terrifying everyone. And he's laughing, thinking it's the greatest thing ever. And she's just like, get out of there.
Yeah.
What are you doing? So she's essentially harmless and she's irresponsible. She's self-absorbed and kind of self-destructive. But she's not turning it outward. He is self-pitying, ready to take offense, and full of rage. And so terrifying other people makes him feel better about himself. And so that's what you're seeing when you watch those monsters. That's kind of what happens.
Yeah, very interesting. Very good, too. Yeah, because he's acting that way in his life, too.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So So, yeah.
And then an aspect of Anne Hathaway's character is when she came to that little town, she came to change. She had no intention of continuing to drink or anything like that.
Do you think so?
I do, because at the bar, remember how reluctant she was to take the first drink, you know? She was alone in the house. She wasn't going out to bars and things. And then when she went out to the bar and he put a beer in front of her, and remember, she paused.
Right.
And she was like, and then she went ahead and did it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that was her intent. I think she had intended to change. That's why she went there.
Yeah, I guess I saw her more as just kind of cast adrift, not really knowing what to do. And that's, I mean, because she clearly isn't used to thinking ahead or anything, because she slept on the floor and she's like, this, okay, now I've got to get an air mattress.
Mm-hmm,
she hasn't thought about anything.
Yeah.
And you're right. She was reluctant to drink because she knows that's, to me, she knew that was the one thing that was causing her a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was interesting. I read an interview with both of them, and Jason Sudeikis was full of, you know, men are the worst, and I hope my son doesn't grow up like this. And I'm like, what are you saying? Golly. And but Anne Hathaway was saying, well, her character, she said, essentially was happy. She has, it just had spiraled out of control,
mm-hmm.
but she didn't hate herself or anything like that. You know, she was just like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's kind of what colored how I saw the monsters also. At that point, thinking of how they reflected each of those people.
Hmm.
But yeah, so, but he, having stalked her on the internet, was like, oh my gosh, this is my chance. And he immediately starts manipulating her. And then as it goes along, you can see how he manipulates his friends, and they let him, because it's a long pattern.
Yeah.
Because at one point later, I was thinking about the fact that as things escalate, I guess we don't need to talk about any of the plot for the rest of the movie. We kind of just jumped right into spoilers. But, you know, it focuses on their personal relationship and then on how he's using his power over as a robot over Soul to control her, which would be just like he would have done with the woman he thought would marry him and her 6-year-old. You could easily see this is showing us kind of the effect that these people can have, holding innocence in safety over people to control them.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was thinking, you know, at one point they show the good guy, good-ish guy, friend, who she pursued watching on TV as this is all going on with the monsters and everything. And I'm like, but his friends didn't go to try to stop him. They knew it was him.
Yeah, they did.
And I'm like, but he's controlled them for so long.
Yeah, and he kind of follows them around like a puppy too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, even when he's been hitting her and everything, when they were monster fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's just standing there going, hey guys, stop it, stop it. You know, it's over. He's not dashing in to try to help her.
Yeah.
He's very passive.
Very true. Very true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's controlled. That's, yeah. Yeah, even when, you know, early on when he liked her, right? It was obvious that he liked her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sudeikis threatened her and said, if you don't stay, I'm going to come here every day and I'm going to destroy stuff.
Right.
The guy still just followed him off. He didn't say, yeah, you're crazy, I'm staying here.
He's an still apologetic
just,
look.
Right. He's just like, I'm just going to.
And the thing that makes her different is she has a sense of self, even if it's a destructive self or, I mean, she doesn't ever go around acting like I'm empowered, but she just doesn't take it from people.
Hmm.
When the boyfriend comes back and says, you know, I'm sorry, I kicked you out, I miss you, I love you. And she's kind of throwing everything back in his face. And I'm thinking, well, she's being really unfair. She had put him in a terrible situation. She was lying to him right and left, as you see from the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And he was right to make her have some kind of accountability. But she is just so self-involved that she's never going to see it from somebody else's point of view, or very rarely. But she does know enough to go, people are dying, this is wrong, and to feel it personally. you know.
That's interesting, you know, to see the fight played out as huge monsters in Seoul, Korea, kind of should give you a perspective of seeing yourself from outside yourself.
Right. And also, and that's the thing that's so interesting, so like, because I guess that's what you would call meta, right? You know, it's commenting on the movie genre as it's being the movie genre. And so, because the other thing that you see is these two self-destructive people, one of whom is very manipulative. The other is pretty manipulative. She's just not doing it from maliciousness. She's doing it because she's just thinking about herself. But look at all the lives they're affecting. You know, in real life, people probably aren't dying, but the fallout is there everywhere. When you act like this. And so this monster movie, we see the people running, screaming. Although I was like, I'm sorry, if this monster is showing up in this area at 8:05 every night, why are there crowds of people there with their kids shopping and
why
whatever?
Why isn't Seoul completely empty? Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was more effective for the movie.
Yeah, there was a lot. There's, you know, if we start down that road of questioning things, it falls apart, I think. You know, just the whole thing, because it's ludicrous, but it's fascinating at the same time.
Yeah, you just have to let it go.
Yeah.
Well, you said it reminded you of Lars and the Real Girl.
Yeah, I said that because kept popping in my head, Lars and the Real Girl, for some reason that I still haven't quite fathomed, but I think that you helped me at least nail down. It sort of occupies the same space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same odd, really bizarre space that the movie goes to, I think, is similar, at least in my head.
You just have to suspend disbelief.
Right, right. This is not a science fiction movie in which, you know, they say, well, here's our explanation, and radiation caused this and that. But there is lightning. There is lightning.
So thank goodness. Lightning is what is reliably there to make everything happen in a movie.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the flaws of the movie, in my opinion, was I did know, you know, watching the movie, they did mention, well, we knew each other when we were kids, right? But this, you know, very late in the movie, they start to show them as kids. And that sort of came out of left field. It was like, oh, you guys were really close when you were young. And I didn't get that impression.
But they weren't close. I don't.
Oh, I thought they were. Well, they were walking together.
I guess I just felt like they were just happened to be walking next to each other. But I guess you could be right. But I also thought that was from late in the movie. But when you're rewatching the movie, they'll show her falling asleep and they'll show a bit of them walking.
Hmm.
Their feet walking, then the next time is her smiling, holding her diorama. Then is, you know what? So they're showing bits of it as the movie goes on. So you're getting little clues that it's linked to their past. But you're right. The big reveal comes later when, you know, lightning hits two people in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's legit. You go unconscious, you wake up, you don't worry about it.
And he's crushing Seoul, Korea, stomping on it.
Well, although it's funny because that he doesn't show up in that one very early. It's just that one monster, right? And they just have that one picture from 25 years ago.
Right, right. Yeah.
But he's crushing her diorama.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why, since I didn't pick up on the they were close because they were walking together, that's why she's standing there outraged, totally outraged, when the lightning hits.
Yeah.
I did like that the lightning hit the top of her head, which is where she always has that odd itch.
Yeah. Right, right.
Well, and the other thing about monster movies is what monster movies have is chaos, confusion, disorder, and danger. And that's what, and that kind of goes back to what me saying of the destruction that you can do to people when you're just thinking about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that's, you know, something that when you talk about, you know, community and sin and things, you know, they talk about how sin sort of affects the environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's affecting people that are around you, whether you know it or not.
Yeah, and in some way, it affects everything even more than that, which is some way that we can't really understand. It's not like saying I do something and the person next to me is hurt and I see my sin hurts them. It's like it also kind of just goes out there into the ether and kind of accumulates.
Right.
And I don't know if it's the ripples that you send out or if it's just a... I'm not up on that.
But yeah, but it affects the community.
Right.
Right. You know, you aren't in isolation.
Oh, yeah.
Look, even if you think you are. Yeah.
Right. She has no community except people who use her. And we just see a little bit of that from the beginning of the movie. When she's gotten rid of the boyfriend, they've been waiting downstairs in the car watching. And they all stream upstairs and start making themselves free with everything there.
Yeah.
And he has gathered a community of people who are dependent on him because he has manipulated them so much. And she is a user of people, honestly.
Mm.
Fairly benign in that she doesn't wish them malice. She just, as I've said before, she's just thinking about herself. And you see it when you see how she pursues that guy whose name I can't, Joel.
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of nice young guy
mm-hmm.
who she's, you know, very aggressive about pursuing him. And in fact, this was the area where I suddenly was like, I don't know if this was written this way on purpose, but to me, a lot of her traits seemed almost masculine. She was very aggressive about how she pursued him in a way that most women aren't. When women are pursuing a guy, that's not how they're flirting. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when, and certainly not in going, so where do you live? I'll just come over. Come on, baby. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the morning when they're asleep and she's going to sneak out. It's very much that what you see is typical masculine behavior, like especially in a movie. And the way she's treating her boyfriend, her live-in boyfriend, you know?
Yeah.
That's not how, when women, I say this as a woman, and I'm not saying women might not do this, but as typical behavior, when women are being selfish or acting out or unhappy, those aren't the ways they do it. Those are very much more men's ways of doing it and being selfish and everything.
So
I just thought it was interesting because it kind of gave her, in this sense, the power to stand up to Oscar. Because she was just worried about what she wanted. And what she wanted was for those people not to be hurt. And she wasn't going to listen to him and take his BS. Whereas women, even strong women, you have to have some adjustment time. And of course, the movie's rushing things along, but they just generally don't act that way.
Very interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
You're right. That's very interesting to think about.
Yeah, I've heard a lot. Because I did the Christ Renews His Parish retreat, and mm-hmm. people will tell their stories, you know, in total confidence to, you know, this group of people. And then also since I was the leader of my team, you go on with the next team for a while they're discerning who's going to be the leader and how they're going to sort out what they do during the next retreat. And so I wound up hearing the stories of two sets of people. And there were really different groups of people, but one thing they had in common was everybody had stuff they regretted and had done and whatever. And I've listened to so many of those things and I was just like, this just isn't typical what they're showing for her.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. It worked totally. But I just thought the whole way through the movie, the first time I watched it, I was like, that's interesting. That's unusual.
Very, very interesting. Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Oscar never met a strong man who'd stand up to him.
Right.
In a sense.
Yeah. Didn't he talk about his parents? Yeah. His parents died right at the very beginning. And his mom died before she even left. And then his dad died after. And I was trying to remember what he said about his dad. That's an interesting thing. Yeah. What did he say about his dad? I can't remember. But
he did talk about him. I thought just that he died. Because that was one of the funny things where he's like, that was a few years ago. And she goes, oh, it must have been tough for your mom. And he's looking at her going, she died a lot earlier. In fact, you were still living here. And she's like, oh, because you went to the funeral. Another way to show how self-absorbed she was. Well, and something that's interesting because I was looking at the fact that, you know, as they say in classic literature, a lot of time the outside landscape or homes and things reflect the inner architecture of the people that mm-hmm. you're talking about. And think about it. You have Anne Hathaway, who, or Gloria, who is living in a completely empty house.
Mm-hmm.
And the few things she brings in for her own comfort, she's just got a laptop and a chair and this air mattress that doesn't work. That's it. Yep. So she's very empty. And then you have Jason Sudeikis, or Oscar,
yeah.
who has an interesting thing. It's one is this bar, which is half finished. He shut off part of it so no one can get in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then his home is a hoarder's home. It's full of all this stuff that needs to be cleaned out.
Yeah.
So it says a lot about how messed up and disorderly his inner self is.
Right.
I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's super interesting. You know, that brings me back to the change thing. So if I just think about this for a minute, if she comes there and she wants a change and she's living in this empty house, it's like, okay, I'm an empty slate, right? And then mm-hmm. he starts to fill it with his stuff.
Oh, you're right.
You know, he's packing in his stuff. And I remember thinking during the movie, you know, how hard it is for a person to change. Mm-hmm. because you have so many things that are trying to hold you where you're at. And, you know, if you're trying to make a positive change and you have friends or something that are sort of trying to hold you where you are because, you know, you're part of that group and they don't want you to mm-hmm. leave that group. And sometimes the fact is you do need to leave the group to change, you know, to make a positive change. But it's like the strength of what's holding you there, the strength of what's pulling, and alcohol for her was another one that was pulling.
Right.
And trying to leave her where she was. But
she's going to fill that emptiness with, you know, that's the thing about the hole, the God-shaped hole, and we fill it with everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
But also what you made me think of, and this is just out of the blue, but remember... Was it a parable or was it Jesus? Well, I believe Jesus says it, and I, you know, unprepared since it just occurred to me, but there's the idea that, you know, he would cast out demons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I believe it was a parable about casting out the demon and it travels the world and can't find anywhere to go. And it comes back and finds the person's heart empty. And so it just moves in with a bunch of its friends.
Hmm.
And you made me think about Oscar moving his things into that empty space. He's going to take over that empty space.
Right.
Although luckily she's kind of like on alert and she won't let him. So it's kind of like, just to connect it to Catholicism, what is it that we're filling our hearts with? What are we letting take up residence there that's going to control us or run us or that we're going to ignore because we're just having a good time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and set that freedom aspect of it. You know, I've heard Pope Francis talk about that, you know, where, you know, and other people, obviously, but they, you know, just the freedom of sort of knowing who you are and knowing mm-hmm. what it is that you need and knowing where it comes from. You know, the freedom of that, the freedom that gives you is tremendous. You know, nothing holding you back, like poor Anne. Yeah.
Right. And also the importance of paying attention to what you let influence you.
Yeah.
Because think of how the things that we see and hear influence our thinking. And we just open ourselves up to everything if we're just absorbing everything from the internet or TV or whatever.
Mm.
You know, you can see that really change people on how they think and act sometimes. Somebody who watches somebody who's very angry all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and belief as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember, there's a quote at the edge of memory here, but it's something like if you... you don't ever believe in nothing. It's like you believe in everything. right? If it's saying if you reject God, you don't believe in nothing. It says some people think that they do. You know, we believe in nothing, but they don't. They're actually filling it with other stuff, like you said before. But it's like you can believe in everything,
right?
Right. Good, bad, whatever, you know, you just don't have a foundation, I guess. Not sure where I'm headed there, but it's just this idea that without some kind of a bedrock, without some kind of some type of a foundation, which is the word I used before, but you become unmoored, right?
Yeah.
Which is what Anne Hathaway really is during this.
Yeah. Yeah. She really only starts to show purpose once she realizes she's got to protect Seoul, Korea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are dying and she's killed someone.
Yeah.
And nobody else is thinking of it as anything more than almost like a video game, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it's like. And people are watching it on TV and you hear the cheering from the nearby apartments when the monster's doing well versus the robot kind
of
thing.
That was so well done. I really thought that was something. You know, once you accept that conceit, then you're like, all right, let's run with this. And what he did with that, the director, I mean, that was really neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, you know, I never felt disconnected. It was like, I know exactly what, you know, there's people in their houses watching this. Everybody's glued to the TV and they're out in the park walking around this playground. And hearing people cheer. Yeah.
And at first I thought, well, they can't hear people in Korea, can they? And then he would show the nearby apartments. And I went, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what they're hearing. Because when she's getting beat up, it's totally silent.
That's right.
And he shows.
I've been walking around downtown Miami during a World Cup and have heard cheers, you know, suddenly. I mean, a lot of people cheering, you know, nobody on the street. Yeah, so I've heard that it was kind of surreal and cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, we need to talk about the ending, because the very ending is something that's you know, we need to talk about. But I thought that what she went to do, that was really neat. I thought that was really cool that she's just like, I got to go somewhere. And then she goes to Seoul, Korea, you know, and again, you're just, you know, how she figured it out, I don't know. But that was a really cool idea. It was and pulled off really well.
I thought so, too. And the fact that she could somehow hear him.
Yeah. Yeah.
When she was holding him in her hands as the monster holding on to him. I know. I was like, because the funny thing is, if you're watching it with my husband, who will do things like, I can't remember what we were watching. We're like, we were watching Wonder Woman. And they weren't making it really clear what German war was being fought, you know. And we went, is it the Nazis? And my husband goes, no, because the plane that crashed was this kind. And that was a World War I plane. I'm like, oh, thank you. And in this, you know, you get the idea when she's on the plane that she's going to go back and be with Tim.
Right.
And my husband's like, you don't get that plane in a small town. That's an overseas plane. I went, okay, thank you. He goes, she's going to Korea.
I went, oh my gosh. Okay. How cool is that?
I know. So they did it right. I mean, it wasn't a surprise because all the clues were there. Well, that was interesting. And because it was so empowering, watching her feet take deliberate steps and then seeing him feeling the ground shake. So this is the power that you take back when you confront somebody who's doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're not a victim anymore. I mean, I felt that both times I watched it, very powerful. And then at the end, though, when she's holding him and he's like, please put me down. And you're thinking, I don't know how you would ever really stop him, but I don't want you to kill him. Please don't do that to yourself, is what I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
That will degrade your soul, basically. And then the movie gives her an easy out. The movie makes it so that she's got to kill him because he's, you know, while he's being threatened and held like that, he starts to become abusive again. So she's then set free to kill him.
Right. And she does.
Mm-hmm.
Gives him a toss.
At that point, it's an execution. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah.
And then the very end. When she goes into the bar. And the person say, "Would you?" She says, "Did you see?" The bartender says, "Would did you see the the robot on TV?" She goes, "Yeah." She's kind of crying and kind of and got this huge smile, and says, "Would you like to hear an amazing story?" "Oh, of course." "Would you like a drink?" And she just kind of goes, and her whole face turns down. That was so.
It was perfect. Really good. Yeah, that was terrific. Yeah.
Because whatever else you achieve in life, no matter what kind of a hero you are, you still have your own internal struggles. Fine.
Yeah.
Still that have was that.
Brilliant. Great moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the moment that a lot of this was, even as fantastic as it was really grounded in reality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hannah's got a friend who was stalked very aggressively by someone who's luckily he's now in jail.
Wow.
But yeah, it was really bad. But, and she saw this on a plane and went, "Wow, I did not expect this to happen." It was so hard to watch because that's the exact behavior, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but that last bit at the end showed how grounded in reality it was for the other personality too.
Mm-hmm.
You still have your struggles.
Right. It was a great moment. Yeah. And again, it just shows how good Anne Hathaway was.
Oh, she was great. Because
it was just well done. Yeah. She played just right.
Yeah. And it also kind of gives a hint that it is the journey we've seen her on. She never seemed as if she wasn't empowered, essentially. I mean, she was always, most of the movie, she was kind of scrambling to feel like, what can I do? How do I deal with this? How do I achieve the, how do I keep the people of Seoul safe? And she is during that process. I think what that little bit at the end shows us is she is beginning a personal journey also of, I have to change.
Mm-hmm.
I have to at least be better on some level.
Yeah.
And he never does that.
Right.
Of course.
Right. Yeah. He doesn't do that. Right. But she does. And that's what I felt too.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the journey we all have, right? Because we're
Agreed.
All in different ways. We're monsters.
Mm-hmm.
But the grace of God and what the Catholic Church teaches, which I think is so great, is we are all good at the base. We're not monsters in that all the way through. It's that outer way we act to people, or the intentions we have, good or bad. Because
mm-hmm.
Oscar's acting very nice, but he has terrible intentions at the beginning. You know?
Yeah, immediately. Yeah. I need to watch it again.
She's thoughtless.
For these clues, but yes.
But her intentions aren't malicious. You know, both of them are affecting and hurting the people around them, but how do you change from that so you become closer to the person you want to be?
Mm.
And that's what the Catholic Church, that's what Jesus Christ does for you, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about that during Mass because I'm reading Bishop Barron and John Allen's new book. And at one point, because Bishop Barron
wrote a book with John Allen?
Yeah.
I didn't
just
know that.
It's coming out at the end of October. Snagged a review copy.
Nice.
And it's called To Light a Fire on the Earth.
Wow.
And it's an interview book. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So John Allen's interviewing Bishop Barron. Oh,
yeah.
I love those.
And he also clearly admires him.
That's great.
You know?
Yeah.
And anyway, so because Bishop Barron does so much apologetic work or, explanation of the Catholic Church and Christianity and beliefs on YouTube and in various other places, you kind of get the feeling that it could be that he's going to say, well, your faith is just as good as mine or whatever. And at one point he says, no. I mean, he's like, why would I not want to share something that's the most wonderful thing that I've ever experienced? You want everyone to have this.
Hmm.
And he says, and Jesus Christ is the ultimate of that. Why would you not want to share that with people? It's not about holding people down and making them follow rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, this is glorious. This sets you on fire and makes you so much better, happier, everything. And he goes, am I going to apologize for that? No. And so during Mass, I was thinking about that and going, suddenly starting a review to myself of what has Jesus done for me? Because, you know, it's easy to forget and just focus on the things like, well, you need to do this, you need to do that. But that's not the basis of it. That's just to help you become that better person. That's just to set up a few of those walls and furnish your inner house better, you know, essentially.
Hmm.
To help you live a happier life. The essence of it, I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, I was set free from so many of the things that tortured me. I was able to forgive people who wronged me and might never say they're sorry, but I'm free of that. It is the ultimate freedom. It is the mm-hmm. ultimate joy. And that is what Jesus does for you. I mean, that's the basis of all that stuff. And that's what helps keep us from being complete monsters like the robot and be more like the Anne Hathaway monster, which intends well. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I want to be better.
Yeah, selfishness versus selflessness.
Right.
Right.
How do you move toward that?
It's great.
You were, you had a prayer you were talking about before that I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right before this. Yeah. We did the peace prayer of St. Francis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I picked it because, you know, St. Francis's feast day was so recently, and somehow it was in my mind. And
I think he's the saint of monsters and robots also.
Exactly.
As well as
he is now.
Rose.
He is now. Yeah. but yeah. So it goes like this. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love, for it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen.
Amen.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, and that's kind of the essence of what you're looking at in the monster movie is people who aren't doing that.
Yeah.
One person you feel like may be able to move toward that.
Yeah, so it's the definition of a monster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Selfishness, inability to be part of a community. And in destruction in the face of selfishness, or in the cause of selfishness, where you're creating your own world, you're making things how you think they ought to be, and destroying everything within reach to make it so.
Yeah, in service of yourself, and that's what causes that chaos and disorder, and because you're clutching it all to yourself, like his hoarder house.
Right. Yeah, I love that you pointed that out. That was neat. You know, her empty house versus his full house.
I was pretty excited when I realized
that was
it.
Pretty cool.
Well, yeah. I just thought, you know, how insightful of the director and the production designer to go, let's show this in every way we can.
Mm-hmm.
And the part of the bar that's, you know, no one gets to go there.
Yeah. That's kind of a representative of, hey, there's a piece of me I don't want no one to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no one gets to see
that.
She
wants him to open it up, and when that happens, nobody's happy.
Right, right.
Yeah, it was well done because it was a kind of combination of both a monster movie and a romantic comedy. Because the way they're interacting at the beginning, you're really like, oh, this is who she's meant to be with, and then both of those get flipped on their head.
Yeah, yeah.
And exposed for, you know, the underbelly of what's going on in a scary movie. Or a horror movie, although it's never, well, I would say the monster part is never terrifying, but the part in the middle,
mm-hmm.
very disturbing.
Yeah, yeah.
Without ever actually offering, you know, the kind of threat that's often offered in horror movies these days, the over-the-top violence and everything, like knives and chainsaws and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. So right now I'm just seeing what Anne Hathaway has coming up next. Just wondering what choices she's making now. And just kind of poking around. Looks like she's doing Ocean's 8.
Oh.
And then there's one called Nasty Women, which is a remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Which I didn't like. Maybe the remake.
So it's going to be like a scam thing with female leads. And then one called Serenity with Matthew McConaughey. The mysterious past of a fishing boat captain living in the Caribbean comes back to haunt him, ensnaring his life in a new reality that may not be what it all seems. I wonder if he'll have his shirt off in that movie. A captain of a Caribbean boat.
Or drive a cat. I guess he won't drive a Cadillac if he's a fishing boat captain.
Yeah.
Oh. Well,
and one more that you're going to love this title. Live Fast, Die Hot.
Oh!
Life for an eccentric New Yorker changes dramatically when she becomes a mom.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. And then the last one that looked really interesting to me, it could be, it's called O2. A woman wakes in a cryogenic chamber with no recollection of how she got there and must find a way out before running out of air.
Have I ever told you that I'm really claustrophobic? I mean, no. I'm not so claustrophobic I can't ride on a plane or in an elevator, but, you know, so I'm mildly claustrophobic, I guess. Never watching that.
It doesn't.
We can talk about it. I will do it from the synopsis.
That's not enough for a movie. Surely more happens than that.
Many flashbacks must be happening.
Maybe so.
Like the one, wasn't there one where somebody's buried in a grave and they're having to find their way out?
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I just looked at that one too and went, no. Yeah,
that's tough. Thank
you. Yep. No.
Yeah. For me, it's heights. Heights are hard.
Oh.
Sometimes, okay. Even in a movie, sometimes it's just like, whoa, oh, really? Holy cow. Yeah, almost
Rose
anything
that
way too. Anything that Tom Cruise has done in the last 10 years makes it squeaky bum time.
Yeah, that's sometimes you look over and Rose is like clutching the arm of the chair. Like,
you're like, you're kidding me. What is he doing?
Actually, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, like Man on a Wire. Who does that? Yeah.
Nobody. Yeah. That's just insane.
That was something. I didn't see that movie. I saw a documentary of that event, but not that movie.
Yeah. No, I don't think anybody needed to see the movie. And I think that might have been the consensus of the box office, too.
The box office didn't like that one?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Yep.
Well, now we have to look it up.
That's right. I'm just looking up Jason Sudeikis. Uh-huh. I'm so sorry for saying his name probably incorrectly.
I'm sure I probably said it wrong the whole time. Mm-hmm. Apologies to all whose ears were upset.
Looks like he's got a voice for an animated movie and then one called Driven, intense thriller where politics, big business, and narcotics collide, which is really like my daily life.
Well, okay, I take it back. 35 to 45 million budget, 61 million. So they like to make 3 times their money, but they at least broke even on it.
I like to make 3 times my money.
Do you invest a lot?
No.
Oh,
but,
okay.
You know, that's what I like.
Well,
if I did.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. Well, let's see here. Is that everything?
Yeah. I don't know. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No.
All right. So what do we have coming up here? Oh, yeah. I remember.
Your choice.
A little Washington Irving. Yeah.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. Yeah. So we're going to talk about Sleepy Hollow and Rip Van Winkle by Washington Irving. Some early American lit.
Two amazing stories.
Yeah.
And easily available everywhere.
For sure. Obviously. And Rip Van Winkle is available on Forgotten Classics.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I meant to record the other one, but I'm kind of off recording right now.
I totally understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And it will come out, I believe, on Halloween.
Yes. Yep.
So it will be perfect listening.
That's right. Tuesday, so Halloween day, right?
Yeah. Read up and get ready.
You bet. Looking forward to those.
Yeah,
Ichabod me too. Ichabod Crane.
Yeah.
Okay. So keep your heads about you, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, talk to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.